tell me about, first, you're director of the Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence in Memphis?
Correct. That's correct.
What sort of work does the Institute do specifically?
The Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence is involved in promoting and educating businesses, people, and especially students in the philosophy of nonviolence. We have workshops, we have programs, we have a program for the prisoners where Arun Gandhi answers all of their emails, and they have a program that they go into the prisons to teach nonviolence there. We have a spring alternative program where students from all over the country come and spend a week with Arun Gandhi studying the nonviolence philosophy and the peace and pursuit of truth philosophy. We have a conference every October that convenes in Memphis, and we partner with the Civil Rights Museum there in Memphis and some other peace and justice kinds of organizations. We bring people, the academicians and the activists from all over the country who will come and spend a weekend just discussing and talking about the philosophy of nonviolence and how it applies to the troops in the trenches that are actually working to espouse the philosophy of nonviolence. So we're doing a lot of things there at the Christian Brothers University.
And I hear you use the word philosophy, and I think you said it in the speech, or I must have read it someplace else. It can't just be a tactic in your feeling. It has to be something which is more profound than that.
It is a tactic in one sense, but that's not all. That's just one dimension of it. Nonviolence is not only our thoughts, it has to be our actions, and it has to be, it starts with self. We should not be violent against ourselves. And then we must not be violent in our own families. We must not be violent in our thoughts, in our actions, and in our words. And so the nonviolent philosophy operates on those three levels.
How do you apply that to specifics, and how do you apply that to specifics today?
Well, for instance, just road rage, just driving down the expressway and somebody is slowing up in front of you and you're angry, you're anxious, you're running your blood pressure up, you're saying some words that are not found in anybody's Bible. That's just a everyday situation of dealing with anger, which is violence. And really the only reason we're feeling like that is because of selfishness. Do we really think that the expressway was made only for us to commute to where our destination is without having the consideration of others who are also moving in the same direction? These are the kinds of things that are permeating our society and our everyday living, and we don't think a lot of it, but these are nonviolent kinds of pursuits that we address. Everything from anger control to watching what you say to being more compassionate and considerate of other people, these are nonviolent philosophies that are in action.
I know that, at least certainly in the last years of Dr. King's life, there were critics then, and maybe even critics now, looking over his life, who thought that maybe that approach had run its course, and certainly there were people in the civil rights movement who thought so. Was there a difference, do you think, in the sort of problems Dr. King met up with at that time, say in the mid to late 1960s, and did, however, the philosophy of nonviolence still apply?
It still applies. Of course, now, Dr. King dealt with a lot of the external manifestations of prejudice and segregation, which is an attitude that we had to go against. You still have some attitudes like that today. I think they're lessening, but I'm sure they're not eradicated. But you don't have the external vestiges of segregation and discrimination as you had then, but you still have other problems that the nonviolent philosophy would be applied to. I believe in my heart that if Dr. King was alive today, he would do a lot of the things today that he did then. He would be opposed to war. He would be opposed to violence in the schools. He would be opposed to violence among ourselves, not only in language, but also in deed and also in thought. The nonviolent philosophy of Dr. King is applicable in every generation, and in every situation at all times.
If he were alive today, do you think his ideas would be regarded in the same way they are now, as sort of greatly respected, if not always greatly practiced?
Well, we always have this problem. Gandhi had it. Other great leaders had it that espoused the philosophy of nonviolence. Nonviolence, it seems to be embraced more by the masses than by those who are entrenched in leadership and those who are in certain other walks of life. I believe that he would still be able to garner the respect and the following that he did then. The people today who are the oppressed, people today who are the downtrodden, people today who are getting the short end of the stick, shall I say, those are the ones who respond most quickly to this philosophy of nonviolence, because nonviolence requires us to be compassionate, it requires us to be selfless, it requires us to do things and have equality in a distribution of materials that would embrace and enhance everybody. And we still have people today who just don't believe that. They just believe that everything should be for them and them alone. They believe that everybody should be on their own, and they don't believe in the collective power that Dr. King did.
When I hear you say words like selflessness, I think that the philosophy of nonviolence is more than simply not using violence. I would imagine that, say, Democrats and Republicans on Capitol Hill usually don't strike out at each other, but they don't seem to be following the same philosophy that you're describing.
Well, Democrats and Republicans could do a workshop. We could do a workshop in the halls of Congress to help both of them, because it is not just what you do. It is also what you think. It's a mindset. And when you have the anger that is, now we don't have the Korean fallouts and we don't have the Japanese fights going on right now, but they're fighting in so many other ways. And the rhetoric of the campaigns, the languages that they're using, even as we're going through right now, Judge Alito, as he's going through the process, and they're trying to select Supreme Court justices. There is a lot of anger. There are a lot of words that are being said that are just not in sync with the nonviolent philosophy.
Martin Luther King Jr. opposed the war of his day, the war in Vietnam. You think he would oppose the war going on right now in Iraq, and what would be his approach to that compared to other opponents of the war?
I believe he would be opposed to it, and I believe that he would express his opposition to those who have been making the decisions to go into war. War is never a solution. This is a non-violent philosophy. War leads to other war. One person's bomb has to be bigger than the other person's bomb. One person's gun must be bigger than the other. So whenever you have war, all you have is more violence, and you have more innocent people who are dying, and you still have not resolved what led you into the war in the first place, which is usually selfishness, which is usually not being considerate of others, which is usually not accepting the individualistic routes that others take in life and thinking that your route is the best route or the only route. And we still have the same problems when we get through fighting and killing people. And so Dr. King would be opposed to it.
I remember reading Dr. King's book about the Montgomery bus boycott. And the thing that I took away from that was the way that he approached, the way that he approached his oppressors. And the belief that his oppressors were people who also had consciences and principles that were were a turning point on which they could be swayed to change what they were doing. And I think that critics of the philosophy of nonviolence say that not everybody has those same principles that can be swayed in that way. And what do you say to people who make that argument?
Well, you cannot. There is no movement that can say that it has embraced or signed up everybody for their support. And so what you have to do is you have to major on those who embrace it and those who will be active in the cause that you are called to espouse. And those who are opposed to it, if you cannot persuade them, not through your actions and through debate and through with open-mindedness, then you certainly can't stop doing what you're doing. You can't stop and wait on them, and you can't allow them to stop you.